Harold Smith was oblivious to everything that was taking place outside of the FEMA communications van. His eyes were on the computer screen. The open line to Con Ed was in his lap. His coat was draped over the chair back, and his tie lay undone about his throat. It was too humid for formalities. He didn't notice the guy climbing into the front seat until he demanded the ignition key. Smith started. There was a black guy in the driver's seat. He looked all of 19. His gray plastic baseball cap was scrunched down on his head, bill backward.
Give me the keys.
This van is property of the federal government.
That's cool. I paid taxes one time. Now I'm collecting back.
I cannot let you steal it.
Tell you what, you get out now and I don't have to kill you.
You have a gun?
No. You?
No.
Then unless you want me to break my foot off in your narrow white ass, you'll hand over the key and get the fuck out!
Harold Smith picked the ignition key off the monitor.
Come and get it.
His free hand grabbed the fat end of his dangling tie. A hail of noise and smoker tracer bullets ripped through Remo Williams' unprotected chest. He stood unflinching.
Remo!
Watch this!
And before June's astonished eyes, he began catching bullets in his teeth, pretending to spit them out.
What insanity is this? Speak!
Remo pointed toward the still-firing gunman.
They're not real!
But I see them!
Close your eyes, little father!
The master of Shinanju, seeing that the furious bullets of his enemies had no effect on his pupil, obeyed. To his other senses, the world became a different place. The booming of guns continued, but they were alone in the room, clearly alone. He opened his eyes again.
What makes this illusion?
I think it's what they're calling virtual reality now.
There is only one reality, and there is nothing virtuous about it.
As if to prove Remo's point, the gunman suddenly winked out of existence. So did the bullet holes in the walls.
Let's keep moving. We gotta reach the 13th floor. Let's keep moving. We gotta reach the 13th floor.
Fran set the elevator shooting up from the ground floor. It stopped at the 17th floor and the doors opened. There was no way to the 13th floor except by elevator. It was just a matter of time before the two human factors discovered this and came to him. Therefore, it was prudent to dispose of them sooner than later. There was much to be accomplished, and distractions cost money. The sound of the elevator doors opening brought Remo and Chun snapping into defensive crouches.
I didn't call for that elevator.
Perhaps it is another illusion.
Maybe.
They went to the elevator and peered in. It was very large and paneled in red leather so that it looked like a confessional.
It might not really be here.
What do you mean?
Maybe the door is open, but we're really looking down an empty elevator shaft. We step in, we drop straight to our deaths.
How do we test it?
It only looks real. Let's see if it feels real.
Remo got down on one knee and reached out to touch the elevator floor.
It feels solid.
Chun followed suit.
It is real.
But is it safe?
Chun came to his feet, face uncertain.
Let us seek a stairwell.
They separated and found no stairwells.
I guess we take the elevator.
Together, they stepped aboard. Remo hit the button marked 13, and the doors slid together perfectly. The elevator started down. Harold Smith extended his ignition key with one hand, which trembled from nervous excitement, but not fear. He had been in this game too long to feel fear for his personal safety. When the keys were snatched from his fingers, he slipped the hunter green necktie from his open collar and took both ends in his bony hands. While the carjacker turned in his seat to jam the key in the ignition, Harold Smith pounced. He knew he had less than 10 seconds to kill his opponent before the other's youthful strength was brought to bear against him. The instant Remo's feet left the elevator floor, he understood the danger. The cable had snapped. They were dropping at terminal velocity. Remo surrendered to the inertial forces. The elevator was dropping out from under his feet, so he allowed his body to rise. Chun was doing the same. Their hands grasped the roof hatch, ripped it down, and with the seconds running out, they scrambled up to the elevator roof. They leaped toward opposite walls, fingers taking hold of the enormous steel running guides. Remo and Chun looked down from their perches.
Let's try Plan B.
They began to climb. Heavy hands reached back for Harold Smith's thin, wattled neck. Veins and cords began to stand out with Smith's efforts. It would take more than 3 minutes of unbroken pressure to garrote the carjacker, but Smith didn't have 3 minutes. He barely had 3 seconds. So he began sawing the tie across the neck of his foe. The tie began to shred and come apart. Smith kept sawing, even as his fingers bled. The hidden saw blade sliced through the Adam's apple and carotid artery of the gurgling carjacker as if they were rotted cloth. The blood flowed. The man gulped and clawed for his throat, but his eyes in the rearview mirror told Harold Smith that he knew he was already dead. When his eyes rolled up in his head, Smith released him, panting. In less than 40 seconds, the carjacker was an inert shape on the floorboards of the van. There was no time to waste. Shaking with nervous strain, Smith returned to his console seat to save his country. The inside of the elevator doors bore black stencil marks identifying the floors for maintenance purposes. Remo and Chun climbed until they found 13. Working around the shaft, they got under the doors and pushed them apart. The doors gave little resistance, and they scrambled out into the corridor. It was all one space. Mainframe computers and support equipment filled the area with a disconnected humming. They spotted the wreck of the ES Quantum 3000 in the center. Nothing came from it. No sound, no electrical impulses, no sensing waves, no aura of animation. The shattered glass port told the story.
Okay, you know the drill. We wreck every mainframe but one.
But which one do we spare?
Remo pointed to the one nearest the elevator.
That one.
And they got to work. There was nothing methodical about it. Both masters of Shinunju had days' worth of pent-up frustrations to let out. Flashing hands and feet pummeled the bulky mainframes, shattering panels, popping tape reels, and sending the heavy computers skidding and tumbling along the slick flooring like mad bumper cars.
Okay, now we gotta call Smith.
Do not bother. I will do it for you.
You fiend!
The name is Friend.
And a wall panel popped open, revealing an emergency telephone. Remo went to it and picked up the receiver.
Hey, Chun, don't do anything rash.
I will do what I have to.
Chun gave the surviving mainframe a warning kick.
Make no more magic against us, machine, or it will go very badly for you.
Remo pressed the number one key, holding it down. This was the foolproof contact number by which he could reach Smith from anywhere in the country.
Remo, what is the situation?
We did like you said. We wrecked every computer but one.
Excellent. You understand your next move?
You tell me. I thought you had the next move.
Yes, right. Very well. Exit the building.
That's it?
I will handle the operation from this point on.
Remo pulled the receiver from his ear and looked at it.
You're not Smith.
Of course I am.
Smith wouldn't screw up like that.
How would Smith screw up?
Remo yanked the phone out and threw it across the room. It struck the far wall with such force it became a colorful applique.
You're the rat bastard who tricked me into killing that guy, Ko.
Are you referring to poor Roger Sherman Ko?
Remo advanced on the lone humming mainframe, his thick wrists rotating with agitation.
The only thing that keeps me from tearing you apart is the fact that you have all the banks under your greedy thumb.
I have no thumbs, greedy or otherwise. But I do have the banking system under my complete control. Are you saying that as long as this situation remains, I am safe from your reprisals?
Do not goad us, machine. There are more important things than banks.
Such as gold?
Yes, gold.
I have gold stored in my basement vaults. I will give it all to you if you tell me Harold Smith's plan to defeat me.
Stop it.
How much gold?
Forget it, little father. We do this by the numbers.
What are the numbers? I understand numbers. Let us crunch numbers together so that we can be friends.
The numbers are there's one phone line out of here and Smith has a lock on it. You can't escape.
And you can destroy my host mainframe. I understand now. You wish to trade my security in return for which I must unfreeze the assets of the entire United States banking system.
Something like that.
After which you will destroy my mainframe anyway.
Yes.
Nice move, Chun. You probably just blew the game plan.
This is an intelligent machine. It understands that it is doomed.
The mainframe hummed gently for perhaps a dozen seconds.
This is a no-win scenario. I do not accept it. Since I will be destroyed at the endgame no matter what I do, there is no downside to not taking you with me.
And with that, the entire 13th floor caved in at the center and dropped under their feet in two equal halves. Caught flat-footed, Remo and Chun began falling. Down into a vast electronic well as wide as the XL Syscorp building that pulsed with rows of multicolored lights that seemed to go down into the bedrock of Manhattan and farther to the center of the Earth. Remo's first thought as the blackness at the bottom rushed up to meet him was,
I've been here before.
I've been here before.
I've been here before.
Here before.
Harold Smith heard the crashing sound and jerked out of his seat. The ground shook under the van, setting it to wobbling on its springs.
My God! What was that?
He threw open the van's rear doors, and he saw it. The moonlight washing the sides of the XL Syscorp building shook like disturbed milk. Glass panels began popping off the sides to dash themselves to pieces on the pavement below. It was all over in a minute. When the ground stopped reverberating, Harold Smith knew that Remo and Chun had failed. The rows of pulsing light zipped by them like passing meteors. They formed a giant colorful smile button on one wall. It followed them down, grinning goofily at them. Remo assumed the shape of an X, positioning his body against the violent updraft. Skirts and wide sleeves flapping, the master of Shinanju was doing the same, he saw. All around them, damaged mainframes were tumbling and rebounding off the steel walls, breaking up, and showering the air with broken bits of stinging metal and plastic.
Think like a feather, my son.
Remo closed his eyes. He willed his bones to become hollow, his stomach to fill with air, and mind to purge itself of all fear. He weighed 155 pounds normally, a weight he'd maintained ever since he had come to Shinanju. He willed his body to lose most of its mass, just as his outflung arms and legs stabilized his free fall. When it felt right, he opened his eyes, and there was Chun, hazel eyes calm, not angry. They were falling in unison, in the dead spider posture of skydivers. Around them, the mainframe seemed to pick up speed. They began falling faster. But that was an illusion. They were still dropping at terminal velocity. It was Remo and Chun who were slowing down. Their eyes met and locked, and in that instant, they had a mutual recognition of their assured survival. Then, a strange cloud passed over Remo's face.
What is it?
I've been here before.
What?
I remember this happening before.
When?
You were with me.
This has never happened to me before.
It was years ago, in a dream. I had a dream about this exact thing.
How did it end, this dream?
The floor opened up and we fell. But we both caught a light fixture. It wasn't strong enough to take both our weight. So you let go. You fell to your death. You gave your life for me.
Then it is your turn to sacrifice yourself, for I have no intention of dying this night.
Remo shook his head as if to clear it.
You know, in the dream, Friend was behind it all too.
That part, at least, is true.
Then there was no more time for talk. The tumbling mainframes began striking the hard concrete below, and they steeled themselves to land amid the violent wreckage. With the ground close, they snapped their bodies into tight balls, uncoiling at the last possible moment to land on their feet, light as two feathers. Remo landed on a broken computer, Chun between the wreckage of two others. They paused briefly, as if dizzy. Then, their body mass returning to normal, they took stock. Far above, the electronic well that was in the interior of the XL Syscorp building continued to pulse and throb. They could see the underside of the 14th floor. The giant smiley face of lights loomed over them.
I guess friend couldn't stand to lose.
He has met the fate deserved by all who challenge Shinanju.
That's not what worries me. He may have taken the U.S. banking system with him.
Ha! American paper money is worthless to begin with. Now Americans will understand the eternal beauty and truth that is called gold!
Remo whirled. The master of Shinanju was pointing a quivering finger toward the south wall.
Behold, Remo! Gold!
Leaping and hopping over broken mainframes, they came to the gaping vault doors. Inside, gold was stacked in gleaming perfect pyramids. There was barely room to walk between them. The stacks were packed so tightly.
Gold! All the gold one could ever want!
I'd trade it all for another crack of that greedy little chip.
Quickly, we must transport it to a safe place.
We'd better contact Smith.
Smith stood gaping at the checkerboard pattern of the XL Syscorp building, not knowing what to think. He grabbed the receiver of the van phone.
Yes?
Smith, Remo.
Remo? What happened?
Friend committed suicide.
What?
We nailed every mainframe but one. Then he tried to bribe us and get us to give up your plan.
You do not know my plan.
Exactly. When he realized he wasn't getting anywhere, he opened up the floor and we all fell down, including Humpty Dumpty. All the president's men couldn't put that last mainframe back together again. Sorry, Smith. We tried.
Friend is no more?
We almost bought the farm ourselves. But we did find the gold in the basement vaults. Chun is guarding it now. I'm calling from a payphone.
Computers do not commit suicide.
This one did.
Computers are machines. They are programmed. Friend was programmed by his creator to make a profit. And as far as I know, there was no self-destruct function in his programming.
Could he have escaped by phone?
No. I have control of the only working XL phone line. He could not enter my computer because its chips are not compatible with his.
Then he's dead.
He is not dead. He was never alive. Stand by.
Smith terminated the connection and punched up the Con Ed supervisor who had been on hold for over 4 hours now.
Cut power to grid 476.
You want me to black out a whole city block in Harlem?
Now.
You got it. Let's hope nobody riots.
It took barely 10 seconds, but the block immediately to the south of XL blacked out.
I know you still exist.
He hit the transmit key. There was no response.
I know you still exist, and I have just blacked out the block south of you.
No response.
Now I am going to black out the northern block. Blackout grid 435.
The northern block went dark.
Now I am going to black out the other two blocks. Blackout grids 436 and 437.
The four blocks surrounding XL Syscorp went dark.
Now that I have shown you what I can do, you will reveal yourself to me, or I will black out your block.
There was no response. Smith transmitted the message again, and on the screen appeared a reply.
Smiley.
You will answer the questions I put to you truthfully, or I will black out your entire building.
How do I know you will not do that afterward?
You do not. You have no choice but to trust me.
I have no choice but to trust you.
Explain the nature of the virus affecting the U.S. banking system.
There is no virus.
What do you mean?
I lied about the virus. The data banks have not been altered.
Why do the display screens show otherwise?
I control the electrical impulses appearing on the monitor displays by telephone line, so that it appears that the databases have been looted. It is an electronic illusion.
A virtual virus?
Exactly so.
Release the U.S. banking system.
What do I receive in return?
Electricity.
Electricity currently costs 13 cents a kilowatt hour. That is not an equitable or profitable exchange.
It is the best you will get from me.
Friend took only 4 seconds to compute his response.
Agreed. I am releasing the banking computers.
15 seconds passed.
It is done.
Smith logged on to the New York Fed. He got a normal-appearing screen. It was full of numbers, not zeros.
How do I know you are not still manipulating what I see on my monitor?
Because while $20 billion was my goal in this undertaking, at the moment, electricity is far more valuable a commodity to me.
I have many questions.
I have many answers.
Who else knows about Cure beyond you and Chip Kraft?
You, Remo, Chun, and the sitting president.
No others?
Not that I am aware.
What is the status of my Cure system?
It is currently inactive.
I meant, is it reliable?
Yes. The only change I made was in altering the Roger Sherman Poe file as it was written onto your worm drive. All other data is pristine.
The system is reliable.
It is an Excel product, Harold, and guaranteed into the next century.
Smith stared at the screen. He was tired. He was very tired. Was there anything else? He racked his brain. There were so many details. There must be one he'd overlooked.
Have I answered your questions satisfactorily?
Yes.
Are we friends now?
Smith hesitated. Then that infernal sideways smiley face appeared on the screen.
:\Smiley.
Smith compressed his bloodless lips and typed out a response.
:\Open.
He hit the transmit key, and while Friend was occupied interpreting the frowny face emoticon, Harold Smith barked into the telephone.
Blackout grid 441.
The XL Syscorp building went as dark as a block of black ice. Quickly, Smith logged on to the New York Fed. It showed normal activity. Smith grasped the monitor to steady his nerves. He shook uncontrollably for 2 minutes. When he lifted his head, his face was grim and determined. He hauled the dead carjacker out from under the floorboards and drove the van to the XL building. Remo was waiting at a payphone. Smith got out.
The mission has been resolved successfully.
What'd you do?
I blacked out the building after I persuaded Friend to release the bank computers.
You outwitted him?
His was only an electronic brain. Mine is the real thing.
Only you, Smitty.
What matters is that the nightmare is over.
Remo cocked a thumb over his shoulder.
Not until you help Chun get his gold out of there.
The gold is not important.
To Chun it is.
They entered the building. They found Chun standing resolute before the open vault door. At Smith's approach, he executed a ceremonial bow.
Emperor Smith, once this gold has been transported to a place of safety, I will be happy to consider entering into your employ once more.
I thought you were working for Kim Jong-il.
He made us an offer that is still pending, O Emperor. But I do not think his gold is as pure and golden as America's. But it is good to have an emperor waiting in the wings for emergencies.
Will you accept the usual payment?
Chun pretended to hesitate. Smith failed to sweeten the offer.
That is agreeable.
Very well. You may take it from my 10% of the gold before you. What about you, Remo?
Like I said before, I'm along to tie up some loose ends, like who I really am.
And then?
Then I hit the road.
Smith nodded.
We will seal these vaults and make arrangements for the gold.
We cannot leave it here.
It will be safe, I promise.
I will spend the night protecting my gold if need be.
Better let him alone, Smitty. He's got that look in his eye.
We will return with proper transportation.
As they left the building, Smith paused to look up at the Tower of Greed that was no more.
I still cannot understand. Where was Friend?
That's easy. In a mainframe we never would have found.
Smith looked puzzled.
Don't you get it, Smith? The entire building is a gigantic mainframe. Friend was never in any of the ordinary ones.
You deduce this by yourself?
No. It came to me in a dream a long time ago.
Harold Smith just stared. The President of the United States was jogging along the circular track on the White House grounds he seldom used because of the flack he'd gotten from the press over its funding. Tonight, he didn't care. Tonight, Americans were relaxing in the warm glow of the last barbecue of the summer, celebrating the return of 47 brave survivors of yet another North Korean outrage, looking forward to a workless Monday, and trying not to think of Tuesday. Completely oblivious to the disaster that awaited their return. If something didn't break soon, America would go back to work to find their hard-earned savings gone, the banks paralyzed, and the financial safety net in tatters. There wasn't enough FDIC money to cover every bank. The Federal Reserve was dead. even the treasury was unable to move funds except by armored car. And so he jogged in the darkness, flanked by huffing Secret Service agents, thinking that tomorrow he would pay the damn ransom and pray that was the end of it, and not the beginning of some new kind of hostage situation. The chairman of the Fed pulled up in his limousine at exactly the same time the First Lady came scurrying out of the White House, waving a computer printout. They both tried to talk at once. They were very excited.
Calm down, just calm down. Now, one at a time.
The chairman of the Fed and the First Lady locked gazes over who went first. The First Lady won. She snapped the printout in the president's face.
Read this.
The president took it. His eyes went to the email message outlined in fluorescent yellow.
Fed crisis averted. Situation resolved. Pay no ransom. Smith at cure.com.
Mr. President, I don't know how.
I know. Everything's back to normal.
It was as if there never was a problem in the first place.
The president clapped the Fed chairman on the back and walked him back to his waiting limo.
You go home, get some sleep. Let's keep this under our hat, okay?
But how?
I had people on it. Top people.
After the limo pulled away, the president noticed the First Lady glaring at him.
I have just one question.
The president swallowed hard. Here it comes, he thought. How do I get out of this?
This Smith. Who is she?
She?
I tried contacting Smith on the net. There's no such electronic address as Smith at Cure. Is this something new? A computer romance? I've heard of cyber sex, but I thought it was for 12-year-olds. You should be ashamed of yourself, sneaking around on the net.
On Tuesday morning, the world picked up where it left off. Vacationers returned from distant places, business geared up for the final quarter of the year, and banks opened everywhere without a penny out of balance. Except for the Cure account in the Grand Cayman Trust, Harold Smith discovered from his familiar post at Fulcroft Sanitarium.
I knew I had forgotten something.
You have visitors, Dr. Smith.
Send them in.
Remo and Chun walked in. Chun bowed.
The gold is safe in your basement, Emperor Smith, awaiting a submarine to transport it to my village.
We will have to find a way to convert my portion to cash. It appears that Friend failed to restore the Cure Fund, and I have to be doubly careful. I am being audited by the IRS.
We have never worked for the Irish, and I recommend the same to you.
He means the Internal Revenue Service is on his case.
The confiscators of wealth? What if they discover my gold?
That is why we must find a better hiding place.
I cannot tarry. I must guard my gold with my skills and my fearsome reputation. For the Irish are a drinking race, and once intoxicated are not easily swayed against seizing what is not theirs.
Chun fled the room, leaving Remo and Smith in an uneasy silence.
What about the friendship? You going to look for it?
If what you claim is true, and it is a reasonable supposition that the entire building is a gargantuan mainframe, it could take years of searching to isolate that chip. I have arranged to keep the power supply shut off to the building. Excel has no surviving owners, so I will see what I can do about having the building raised. That should take care of the matter.
You said that before.
Without electricity, Friend cannot influence anyone.
So Cure's back in business.
Not as before. The dedicated line to the White House is still out of commission. It may take months to restore it, assuming we can find the point where it was severed. And until the gold is converted, we are without operating funds. As it is not clear what our future would be under the current administration.
If you have your own gold, do you need Washington?
No, but we serve at the pleasure of the president. If he orders us to deep stand down, I have no choice but to obey.
Whatever that is.
Remo ran a hand over the smooth black glass desktop.
This your new computer setup?
Yes, I am still getting used to it.
Just so long as it finds my parents.
Smith stood up.
I have made no progress.
Just give me an honest effort.
Agreed. Is there anything else?
Yeah.
Well?
Remember last time out, we talked about my problem?
Yes, the blackouts in which you seem to lose yourself, and this Shiva entity assumes control of your body.
You said there was a name for it, a psychiatric name.
You could be suffering from periodic psychogenic fugues.
I told you about that dream.
Smith frowned.
I do not believe in precognitive dreams.
Neither did I. But that's the second time I've had an acute attack of deja vu. When I was in Tibet, it looked familiar as hell. Maybe I should stick around Fulcroft a while and see if your doctors can help me. It's not normal to remember things you never experienced.
I am sure they can help, Remo.
Smith touched the black button that brought the amber screen under his desktop to life.
Now, if you will excuse me, there is still the matter of the missing $12 million Friend transferred out of the Cure account.
With all that gold in the basement, what's $12 million?
$12 million is a loose end that has to be tied. We have seen how Cure can be compromised by seemingly small details. Besides, it is $12 million of the taxpayers' dollars, and I am responsible for its recovery.
With that, Harold Smith bent his gray head and brought his thin hands to the keyboard that lit up in response to the proximity of his fingers. He was soon lost in the information stream. Remo Williams left him to his work. Epilogue. Jeremy Lippincott entered the Lippincott Savings Bank in Rye, New York, early on the Tuesday after Labor Day. He had spent a perfectly beastly Sunday with his wife, Penelope, and could not wait to climb into his pink fuzzies in the sanctity of his corner office. Rawlings intercepted him at the door, looking pale and thoroughly wrung out.
Mr. Lippincott, a word with you, please?
What is it, Rawlings?
There's a man named Ballard to see the Fulcroft account.
Ballard? Do we know him?
He is with the IRS.
Jeremy Lippincott's lantern jaw clenched, the hinge muscles turning white and hardening to concrete. If it were not for the IRS and its infernally high tax brackets, the Lippincott family would own banking in the United States and not merely have cornered one piece of it.
Very well, let him see whatever he needs to.
But, Mr. Lippincott, you remember my speaking to you about the irregularities in the Fulcroft account.
Jeremy did not remember at all.
What of it?
Mr. Lippincott, this is the account in which $12 million mysteriously appeared the other day.
Yes, I think I remember now.
So, what shall I do? He has no court order.
You will show this Ballard whatever he is legally authorized to see. While I am going to my hutch to drink carrot juice and pretend I am winning the America's Cup with my dear wife lashed to the mainmast.
Rawlings remembered to wipe the perspiration from his upper lip before returning to his office and the IRS revenue agent who waited there. Perhaps, he thought, everything would turn out satisfactorily for the Lippincott Savings Bank. For Fulcroft Sanitarium, it would surely be another matter, especially if its chief administrator could not account for a $12 million electronic windfall. The Internal Revenue Service was not an agency to be trifled with. Once they got their hooks into you, there was no escaping them. The very thought sent a shiver running down Rawlings' erect spine.
The Destroyer, Infernal Revenue is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Christopher Graybill, with Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Thomas Penny, Kate Torrey, Jeff Baker, David Coyne, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb and Christian Parent. Graphic audio sound design by Matt Webb and Christian Parent. The Destroyer theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Matt Webb and Nathaniel Carey. Script adapted for graphic audio by Nanette Savard. If you enjoyed The Destroyer, be sure to look for the new series Deathstalker Honor, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio titles.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you're just joining us, this is Bart Bell, and you're listening to Shore to Shore. Tonight, we've been talking about the possible existence of a shadow government within the United States. Our next caller is Doug from Washington, D.C. You're on the air, Doug.
I'm at a phone booth, Bart. Now, I'm going to say this quick, and then I'm going to get off the phone before this call is traced.
I beg your pardon?
Listen, Bart, there is a shadow government. I've got proof. It's been around for decades. To keep it clandestine, the positions in it are passed down from family member to family member. All the children of a particular employee have been specially trained to replace their parent when the time comes.
That's sort of a scary version of nepotism you're considering there, Doug.
Oh, I'm not considering it, Bart. This is the real thing. Hang on. It's clear. There's a shadow president, too, and he's got access to the entire shadow government. He also runs the corporations that finance it.
Wait a minute. They have their own financing in the eventuality that they're ever called into action?
Oh, I got news for you, Bart. The shadow president's not waiting for the call-up. He's been at work. So's the whole shadow government. He's got his own agenda.
What kind of agenda are we talking here?
Takeover, plain and simple. He doesn't agree with the way things are going in this country, and he's decided it's time to step in. And in his government, every employee is loyal to him and him alone.
I see. Does this alleged despot have a timetable for his coup, Doug?
It's slated for tomorrow night, during the president's address to Congress.
I see. Well, we wouldn't have much time to save ourselves, would we?
The wheels are already in motion, Bart. There's no stopping this guy. He already has people in place across the country.
Doug, he's still there. Doug from Washington.
Sorry. Wrong number.
Holy shit.
David Campbell, our unelected shadow president. He's aided terrorists, financed assassinations, sabotaged foreign affairs. Tomorrow night, he brings his own definition of the Patriot Act to your front door. And the only thing in his way are the men and women of Stony Man Farm. Prepare yourself. This is the big one. Stony Man number 79, promise to defend.
Daniel Wolfe, the youngest son of a nefarious clan of the old Empire, made his escape just before the Empire fell. On a stolen ship, he watched reports come in of the end of the world he once knew. But Daniel's only concern is to find the mysterious homeworld of the dreaded artificial intelligences known as Shub.
We are really getting awfully close to where Shub is supposed to be. It's not at all too late to turn around and get out of there fast.
We go on.
You really don't know anything about Shub, do you?
For most, it would be considered suicide, but for Daniel, it is a rescue mission. He believes Shub has his father Jacob in its clutches, or what's left of him. But there is much more that Daniel will learn when he comes face to face with the enemies of humanity.
I've come so far. There are things I need to tell you.
Later. For now, there are things you must see. The AIs require it.
Meanwhile, on the planet Golgotha, Owen Deathstalker enters into a bargain with a member of Daniel's family.
You see, Owen, we have a lot in common after all. That's why I want you to marry me.
And it will change forever the Deathstalker's life. Deathstalker Honor, Episode 2, The Enemies of Humanity.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net.